A landmark court ruling in 1996 became the basis for employee ethics training. So 30 years later, is that training working? You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss building an ethical environment for employees are Director of the University of Cincinnati's Corporate Law Center, Neil Taylor. Thanks for being here, Neil.
Thanks for having us.
And GE Aerospace General Counsel for Propulsion and Additive Technologies, Bridget McGraw. Welcome, Bridget.
Thanks so much.
Great to have you both here. Neil, tell us briefly about this ruling that kind of set the stage for the corporate ethics training that so many of us take now.
Well, the Caremark case itself is really quite boring, so I'll switch right past that.
Fair enough.
What it did say was that any rational person that's running a corporate enterprise would have a corporate ethics program that followed the U.S. sentencing guidelines that lay out a series of steps. And before Caremark, the only companies that really had compliance programs had either had a big problem that needed to be solved and they needed to show that they were, you know, coming back from it, or they were in a very highly regulated industry. After Caremark, everybody had one, because if you went to your board and said any rational person would do this, they're like, yeah, we're rational.
We feel rational, at least today, right? So is the idea behind this that companies that require their employees to go through this kind of training, they can maybe get into less trouble legally than those who don't if something comes up?
Exactly. It's that if you maintain an ethical culture where people have an opportunity to speak up, report anonymously if they have to, that if something goes wrong, the prosecutors understand that not everything is perfect. And if you've done your best and an outlier happens, then you get credit for trying. And often the corporation will be given kind of a free pass. They will ask that you remediate whatever went wrong in that sense.
Sure. Well, Bridget, what kind of training does this apply to? Is this about like not taking bribes, or is this also about sexual harassment and discrimination? And what does this all relate to?
So, Lucy, I think it's really about everything that a corporate culture wants to embody and wants their employees to understand. So, and as Neil said, it's a suite of things that are offered across corporations to help employees understand what the rules are and how to do things the right way. So training is definitely an element of that. There is that, and the training is really there to help employees understand what issues might be out there and how to spot them. So I don't think any corporation, and we had a corporate symposium at the UC Corporate Law Center on Friday where we delved into these issues more deeply. And I think everyone on the panels agreed, you know, we don't look at training as a one-trick pony. We understand that training is across a very robust compliance program that corporations need to have that help employees spot issues, raise them through open reporting programs, and get their questions answered when those come up so that they can do things the right way.
So training is a piece of the puzzle. What does research show about whether this training is effective or ineffective? Does it matter if it's online or in person? I don't know which of you wants to tackle that.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So I can talk a little bit about, I think, you know, adult learners learn differently. And there's been a number of studies. And I think compliance professionals look across the different ways to teach their employees, both in ways that allow them to understand the content and that are cognizant of the time that they have available. So I think compliance professionals would love to train their employees very in depth on every single issue, but that's just not realistic. So it's really a risk assessment around what are the most important issues, what are employees most concerned about or most confused about, and making some decisions around how they're delivering training based on that, whether it's online, whether it's in person, whether it's some kind of scenario training that they do differently. But I think there's a number of different options that people employ across corporations to make sure that the messages are being absorbed by employees.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think online training is better than having nothing, but not a whole lot better. But when you're in one of those roles, I had 15,000 people in 67 countries in one of the roles I had. I obviously couldn't meet with them all. I traveled all over the world doing as many as I could in person, because that's the conversation is really where you get to the meat of things. It's not in memorizing 10 rules or something like that.
And, or picking the right answer out of a multiple choice, whatever.
Right. You know, yes, you don't get to get out of the program until you've answered these four questions correctly. I mean, it does something, but I don't think it does a whole lot. And it can also, if you don't have a good culture, then the online training, I think, is worse than having nothing at all.
Why is that?
Because if you are sitting watching a video and they say, you should do this and you should do that, and you say, oh, well, my boss does exactly the opposite. If the company is giving you one message and the people you interact with on a daily basis are giving you a different message, then it's not going to be very effective. It might even be counterproductive.
Huh. Well, we are talking about employee ethics training and compliance in the workplace. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. It does seem like a lot of this has become online training. All the places I've worked, it's been, you know, I've had some of each, I guess, in the different corporate settings where I've worked. What is the advantage of online training for employers? Neil mentioned having to reach a whole lot of people over a whole lot of places. That seems like it might be one of them. Are there other advantages?
I think that there's an ability to make sure everyone's hearing the same consistent message, Lucy, through an online training platform. And then, of course, to Neil's point, you augment that with in-person opportunities, but certainly making sure that in very complex issues in compliance spaces, that people have one consistent training that they understand, and they understand the company's position on particular issues.
And then I would imagine if somebody comes and follows up to say, hey, has everybody been trained? You've got an online record to say, everybody did this. This is, everybody got the same information. Is that a help too?
That's correct. Yeah. So in the event, and certainly in highly regulated industries, it's really helpful and important to show that, hey, we've done this type of training for all employees and they're required to take it. And it is critical that you don't miss somebody. So that online recording makes sure that you've got everybody covered in these really critical pieces of the compliance program.
Yeah. Neil, a lot of us have taken some type of training like this. And I know I've been in places, not here, of course, but I've been in places where it's not always taken seriously. Why do you think that is?
I think when people worry that it's a check-the-box exercise and that it doesn't actually reflect the values of the company or how the company operates, then, like I said, I think it's counterproductive. And people don't necessarily view it. They view it as something I have to do, my boss is going to make me do. I mean, the last 15 people at the company that you're chasing to get their training done, you're all over them. And they're like, I'm too busy. And you're like, no, you're not. Because if you're going to work here, you're going to, you know, give me this 15 to 30 minutes. And I think that's it. I think people worry or believe that it's not being done to actually help them, that it's being done to help the company. Mm-hmm. And that's why we work very hard on training and augment it with in-person training and make sure that consistent messages are being delivered across the corporations, the people that do it right at least. Then you won't have that same kind of resistance to it if it's something that they're doing that is consistent with what they see every day.
Mm-hmm. Do you think in some types of training, and I guess I'm thinking about the online training specifically, and I'm sure there are some that are better than others, obviously, like everything in life. But is there anything that about the training itself that can make it easy to not take seriously? Like if you've got a multiple choice and it's like, you'd have to be a complete idiot not to know the answer is C, you know?
Right.
I mean, is there anything about that makes it harder for people to take seriously?
I think that the hard thing is online, it's very difficult to get into really thorny problems, right? So you end up seeing a lot of that when you're taking the training. You're like, okay, I know I'm not supposed to steal the office supplies. You don't really have to tell me
right, to
not have a side business stealing pens and selling them out the side door. And the really interesting issues that people get really excited about, and that's why I think both of us, if we had our druthers, we would not do online training. We'd sit and have conversations like this with every single employee. but sometimes you just can't. And I think that that, because sometimes the training is so easy and obvious that people are like, oh, this isn't a good use of my time.
Yeah.
What I will say, though, too, is I think the benefit of the online training is it does help employees understand, hey, this is an issue. The company's spending time on this. They want me to take my time away from my day-to-day and the things that impact the bottom line to go over here and really understand this issue. And I think Neil's right. It's hard to get into the thorny issues on online training, but it does spark those conversations. I think often it sparks employees raising questions. I think good training reaches out to the employee at the end to say, if you have more questions, this is where to go. So it's really a baseline in the overall compliance program that good companies and the companies that were reflected on Friday really talked about as the overall suite of offerings that really make a robust program.
Yeah. You were talking about thorny issues, and I think of sexual harassment. And I know, you know, I would imagine that's one of those things where an in-person training can be really important and you can get into nuance. But sometimes you might have somebody who is perceived as somebody who is a sexual harasser in the room for the training. I mean, how do you juggle something like that if there's somebody in the office culture who does stuff that doesn't feel appropriate to some people? You know what I mean? How do you walk through all that?
I'll give you a 20 years ago example.
Okay.
Because I used to do sexual harassment training sometimes as part of larger trainings. And you sort of knew when you had one of those in the room, and you just have to be very prescriptive of we're not doing that today. Mm-hmm. You're not going to make a joke of this. You know, I would say to a group of people that sexual harassment is judged on a reasonable woman standard, which it is. And some idiot would go, oh, there's no such thing as a reasonable woman. And,
wow. Here we go. This is an example, right here.
And you have to just shut that down, mm-hmm. like right away, strongly. Those same people have women in their life that they care about. And, you know, I would just turn it straight around on them and say, is that really the message you want your daughter to hear? Because often I would know whether or not they had one.
Right.
And that would change the discussion back to what we ought to be talking about instead of treating it like a lark where there's nothing serious actually being discussed.
Yeah. Well, this is fascinating. We've got a lot more to talk about, and we will continue our conversation after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about employee ethics training and compliance in the workplace. My guests are GE Aerospace General Counsel for Propulsion and Additive Technologies, Bridget McGraw, and Director of the University of Cincinnati's Corporate Law Center, Neil Taylor. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Bridget, we've talked about all these different kinds of trainings, in person, online. Is training the answer, or is there a different approach that companies need to consider or do consider when it comes to really building an ethical workplace?
Yeah, I mean, training, as I said, is an element, Lucy. It's certainly not the whole package. And when people think about what makes a ethical workplace, you're talking about building trust within your employees. And a lot of that starts with making sure that employees understand that they can raise issues and those issues will be investigated, those issues will be looked at, that they will be communicated with around what the issue was, how it's resolved, what the next steps are. Those go a long way to building trust with employees. So they continue to raise issues. They continue to ask questions. And certainly, if you have an issue, and I had the privilege on Friday of sharing this stage with Megan Gaffney Painter, who's a former U.S. District Attorney at our Corporate Law Symposium at UC Law Center, it really does build credibility then if you have an issue. So Megan was talking about those programs matter, and the validity of those programs matter. And so it's not, training is a piece of that, the open reporting program is a piece of it, the round tables and the in-person things that Neil was talking about, those are all elements that really drive the culture that companies want to have around compliance.
Sure, and then that follow-through is everything.
The follow-through is really critical, because if an employee raises his or her hand and something, and they're not communicated back with, even if that issue is resolved, that trust is lost with that particular employee. So that follow-up, that communication is extraordinarily important.
Yeah. Okay, philosophical question. Are we as humans inherently ethical, unethical, or neutral, Neil? Does it depend on circumstances or groupthink?
Entirely, it does not depend. There are no bad apples. You're not born that way. You're not born unethical or ethical. There's a lot of research that shows that if you put people in the worst situation, they will compromise their values. Most people. Those who don't are really outliers. Unfortunately,
it's like stealing to feed your children if you have nothing, no food, no way to feed them.
Lame is, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
And, you know, and so situational factors actually matter more than individual character. Most of us, we know the difference between right and wrong, and we have all our lives. And that's why fostering conversation in this space is the most important thing, because it's really hard to examine your own conduct and whether or not you're behaving ethically unless you have someone else to talk about it with. When you have open conversations and you celebrate dissent and you rely on experts for what you hired them to do, you have a much better chance of avoiding ethical missteps than if you say, well, everyone must have learned in kindergarten the difference between right and wrong, and we'll just rely on that.
Yeah. So can both of you talk just a little bit, in a little bit more detail, about how to build an ethical workplace? What else goes into that to make sure that not only people are tapping into what they learned in kindergarten, but also can talk to each other and have that communication?
I think it really is incumbent on leaders to not just tolerate dissent, not just tolerate people saying, I don't think so. It's also works really well when leaders get feedback before they have given the answer. Because anyone who's run an organization, a team, or even a meeting knows the frustration of everyone waiting for the leader to speak and then falling in line behind. So you can do things like make everyone write down their ideas on this issue that we'll be discussing, so that then you can go around the table and get all of their input before they wait to find out what the popular answer is.
Yeah, or the right answer.
Exactly.
In quotes, yeah.
Because people would rather be part of their group than to be the minority position, unless that group celebrates minority positions and understands that you can make better decisions, get to better answers, if you allow everyone to speak freely and not just allow it, but be happy about it. Mm-hmm. You know, when somebody raises their hand and you think you're at the end of the meeting, that's when you need to, you know, step in and say, tell me what you're thinking.
Yeah.
I would 100% agree with that. You know, it does start with leaders and that respect for people. And it's not just building a compliance program. It's that intentionality of building a culture of openness for all employees to raise their hand on any issue, even the tough ones. And then making sure that there are different outlets for raising issues. So it's not just to the leader, but there's alternative paths if there's an issue that an employee needs to raise in a different forum. And again, that follow through that I talked about, making sure that employee is understood and heard however they raise the issue, is really what drives that trust across the spectrum. And I do think people inherently want to do the right thing. They want to know how to do the right thing, and making tools available for them to understand how to find the answer or how to ask the question are what's really important.
Yeah. So we're 30 years out from this landmark ruling. I guess just quickly, I wonder, what's your assessment? Is there Do we still need this training? It seems like in a lot of places it can be a check-the-box kind of thing. Is it still an important piece of the puzzle?
Well, I don't think check-the-box training is important, and I think everyone knows that. And that's why I think you have to focus on your culture and have your training be a reflection of your culture. If you don't, then everyone's going to recognize that you're doing check-the-box. And the companies that do it best, companies like GE Aero, are the ones that understand that and have their training and their whole program really tied to what are the risks that face this business, as opposed to we're going to buy something off the shelf and make you watch it and then keep a record that you did.
Sure. Anything you want to add to that, Bridget?
No, I think that's exactly right. I don't view most good training is not check the box training. Good training is the training that allows employees to understand what the issues are. Maybe not answering all of their questions, but at least giving them the headset of the important issues to pay attention to.
Sure.
And the follow-through that Bridget mentioned is absolutely critical, because then the message goes around, they actually do care.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you really get to them, is when they understand you're going to come back with answers.
Yeah. Well, I have been talking with Director of the University of Cincinnati's Corporate Law Center, Neil Taylor, and GE Aerospace General Counsel for Propulsion and Additive Technologies, Bridget McGraw. Thank you both so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical directors today are Ella Rowan and Carlos Lopez Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.